You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to Thursday, which we often refer to as Friday Eve around here. And Boomer's on the board. Hey, bro.
Hey, hey.
How you?
I'm good. Thursday.
Did the little man have a baseball game last night?
No, they would have made today better.
He had one earlier this week, though, right?
He did. He had one on Tuesday, and he rocked it, and we're just waiting for next Tuesday's the next game.
So no kidding, he's a star of the team.
Yeah, you know, he's pretty much a star.
Come on.
I don't know what stars are in a five-year-old baseball, but
he is.
He does a good job.
He's setting the standard.
That's
how
right.
about that?
That's
I've seen him run, though.
Dude, he's fast.
Dude,
I will
fast.
Say he is very fast.
Like, if he grabs a Twinkie in the kitchen, you can't catch him. He's going
to
be down
Mr.
the hall.
Twinkie will not catch up to him.
All right, you guys, we got a great show laid on for you. Plenty of stuff. 3 o'clock today, Scott Stantis. Scott's a friend of mine. We've done some work together. Scott Stantis, such an interesting career. He is a bona fide syndicated political cartoonist who has got stuff published in like hundreds of newspapers, even been up for a Pulitzer before, I believe. But anyway, Scott Stantis is going to be on because, yeah, aside from the fact that he lives back here in Alabama now, he's spent a lot of years in Chicago and working for the Chicago Tribune, and Chicago's election was a mess. So we're going to talk to Scott Stantis, 3 o'clock, get his perspective as a part of what we're doing with the Triple Dipper. And then at 3:30, one of my favorite times, in fact, let me just clarify, my favorite time every single week, Boomer and McQueen. So that's coming on at 3:30. You guys got your game face on? You ready for that?
Oh, well, we're ready. I'm ready for this.
And McQueen will be in studio this time.
She'll be in studio.
Yeah, you actually allowed her to travel last week.
I did.
What a misogynistic thing for Phil to say. He said he allowed her to travel.
I said, yeah, of course, that'd be a great idea. Have fun.
All the points.
All the points
for you. All right, Scott Stantis, 3 o'clock, Boomer McQueen, 3:30, and then there's this whole Triple Dipper thing, so hit it.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you have got to know as we run today's show. So number one, right out the gate, local leaders is what I'm calling it, local leaders. Because, you know, we talk all the time about what's happening with the presidential race. Who's running for the U.S. Senate? What are they doing over here in that major national race? You ever stopped and thought about what a difference mayors make? I know I've done this before, but we're going to hit it again because there's some new stuff out there. Mayors, and even some of those right here in Alabama, some of the crime statistics in our state are dragged down by, I don't know, Birmingham. Liberal leadership makes a big difference, even in a red state. So we're going to talk about it. Local leaders, number one on the Triple Dipper. Number two, Transamerica. And I am not talking about the insurance company. Transamerica. Have you seen the fact that apparently this Dylan Mulvaney is getting all kinds? I mean, like, he's all the rage right now, which is crazy to me because this is like a freak show. And I don't mean like, even if he wasn't trying to pretend that he's a girl, his behavior is so beyond the pale. Why would anyone want him to be their spokesperson? Anyway, Transamerica has got any number of stories about states that are pushing back and those that aren't. Y'all stay tuned for Transamerica, number two in the Triple Dipper. And then number three, opinions that matter. So there are a few out there that write op-eds once in a while that I just trust. I know when I go read their stuff that I'm probably going to be okay with it. At the very least, I'm going to, you know, agree, but I might even gain from it. And so I'm going to go through several of those today. My whole point in doing this, though, is you've got to find those places, those sources, those writers, those pundits that you trust. You can't trust all of them, but some of them, they stand out to you. And I've got a few opinions that matter. That's number three on the Triple Dipper. But let me jump over here to my comments. And I will say that what I'm about to tell you is a true story. It's a true story as related by real people about amazing things during crazy times. So I got your attention now, don't I? This is a story, by the way, of finding something that shouldn't have been there, and no one even knows how it got there, but it was exactly what was needed at the time. It's a story of what was referred to still to this day as the Miracle Well in the desert during the onset of the first Gulf War, otherwise known as Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm. Now, the events of this story occurred just over 31 years ago. The man who tells the story best is an Alabamian, a former commandant of the Marine Corps, a former president of Birmingham Southern College. We're talking about retired four-star general Charles Krulak. Krulak's story became known soon after Desert Storm and was published far and wide. Now, I'm going to relate it like I've seen it written up in a couple of sources, one of which was the Tampa Bay Times. You see, in war, logistics are everything. You can have the toughest warfighters, the finest strategies, the best weapons, but if you cannot get beans and bullets to the front lines, it's all for naught. Well, one of those major logistical nightmares in desert warfare is water. The average man can go for weeks without food, but can only go for a few days without water. But combat trains also need to bring in water for things like cooking and cleaning and decontaminating and servicing vehicles. And, well, water is key to life in many ways. And going into Desert Storm, General Krulak's job was to secure water in sufficient amounts to win that war, and it was not going well, not at all. Krulak relates that he initially had wells sufficient to meet the need of 100,000 gallons per day. That was the estimate they needed, 100,000 gallons of water a day. But as the Iraqi forces began to array themselves in places that were not planned for, General Schwarzkopf had to revise his strategy, and Krulak had to find new wells in a huge flat area 74 miles away, referred to as the Gravel Plains. There was no water at the Gravel Plains. He says for 14 days that he had engineers digging desperately to find water. They went to the Saudi government, asked them if they knew of any water in this area. Their answer was no. They brought in the exiled Kuwaiti government to the command post, pored over the maps, and asked them, "Do you know if there's any water in this area?" They said no. They even went to Bedouin tribes and nomads, the people who lived out there. They said, "Do you know where there's water on the Gravel Plain?" And they said, "No, there's no water there." He said they kept digging wells hundreds of feet deep to no avail. Krulak relates that he had exhausted all resources except one. And it's that one that he turns to every single morning. Since 1977, it says that Krulak had made a habit of praying with any staff members who wanted to join him at 7:15 a.m. He said, "I was on my knees every day praying for water." So on one Sunday morning, with only a few days remaining before the ground attack, a colonel interrupted his morning prayer with a request for Krulak to please accompany him. When Krulak asked what it was for that the officer wanted him to see, the colonel said, "I don't want to tell you, sir. I want to show you." As the two traveled down a road that had been built by the Marine Corps, they came upon a sight that could have been lifted right out of a script from the Twilight Zone, because they saw what looked like a pipe just rising up out of the ground. And as they came up on it, it was almost in the shape of a cross at the top. A crossbar went straight across the middle of that big pipe, and what they saw next left the general and the colonel incredulous. A brightly painted red pump at the base of the pipe, a green diesel generator, four new batteries still wrapped in plastic, and 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel stored in a tank above ground. Now, keep in mind, Krulak related, that his troops didn't even have diesel fuel because everything they used ran on gas and jet fuel, but yet there was a brand new, fully installed pump with a brand new generator and a brand new tank filled with 1,000 gallons of diesel, and no one knows how it got there. Where did that pipe even come from? Krulak says he actually walked up, looked at it, and pushed the start button, and the new German-made generator just turned over and water started flowing. He said that well flowed to within about 10 gallons of the 100,000 a day that they needed for the assault. Krulak cannot even recall how many times he had traveled down the road that ran right by that pipe, and he was not the only one. A division of men, 20,000 troops, had traveled that road, and there was no way, he says, anyone could have driven down that road and not seen that well and that equipment painted in multiple colors, all fresh and sitting right out there. No one knows where it came from. Said Krulak, who firmly believes the well appeared in an answer to a prayer. He said every bit of that well was brand new, freshly painted, as if it had just been put there overnight, but no one, even to this day, no one knows who built it. No one can say how it got there. It was just there. It was just there at just the right place, at the right time, in the right amount, And some have speculated, oh, maybe they just missed it before. Well, yeah, right. But you heard the general's own words. They were looking. They were asking. They were checking with people who make a living knowing where wells are. Within days, the sands of the desert had begun to kind of wear the paint off that fresh pump, which clearly indicated that it could not have been there very long. Colonel John Woodhead, who was Krulak's chief of staff during Desert Storm, said he supports Krulak's interpretation of the events. In his words, he said, even if the well had already been there, its discovery came at exactly the right time. Well, so one either has to accept the blind roll of the dice or believe that things happen for a reason. Well, General Charles Krulak retired. He still lives in Birmingham, I understand. He's a man of faith, a man of great service. He's also a man, though, that can point to a spot on the ground and say unequivocally that he had no other explanation for something except that God just showed up and made it happen. I've had those times in my life. Maybe you have as well. Times when I was in a rough spot, having no idea how or where or when things would turn around. Times when I've literally prayed for what some would call streams in the desert. It's easy to get into a moment and forget the times when things work out in the past. I'm guilty of it. I can lose sleep over something right now, even though I've seen worse in the past and watched as God stepped in and just met that need at that right time in that right place at the right amount. How is it we can see a miracle one day and the next day we pretend as if miracles never happen? Well, it's Easter week. Tomorrow's Good Friday. So if you've seen a miracle at any time in your life before, I just challenge you, call it up in your memory and rehash the details, and tell somebody the story. Because sometimes there's streams in the desert, and it makes no sense except to say, God just showed up and did that. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, yeah, true story. Major General Charles Krulak, it's spelled K-R-U-L-A-K. I guarantee you, go ahead, just Google it. Just Google Miracle Well Desert Storm Krulak. You'll find it. He still gives speeches about it. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. So you had never heard that story, Boomer, the miracle well?
No, I never have heard it, but it was amazing.
I got there's several texts have come in saying, you know, similar things. JT from Lacey Springs just texted in and said, well, if my texture will come up. Yeah, there it is. He just came, he says, one word for that monologue, speechless. I just said, true that. Ken from Athens, he texted in and said, I'm a well driller. I've hit water where it shouldn't have been, and I've had dry wells next to a river. God provides what we need when we need it to glorify him the most. And I just said, There it is. Let's see what else I got in here. Nope, not that one, not that one. There's a couple of folks just saying, you know, hey, love the show. And folks, we appreciate that very much. We also got a new texter. Who was our new guy? Wayne from Southside's brand
Wayne
new
from
in the
Southside.
Texting. Yeah, glad to have you, Wayne. And then where is it? Sam from Priceville. Oh, my texture is dragging today. Here it is. Sam from Priceville just texted in and sent a link or a screenshot of, the top 10 safest cities in Alabama thus far for 2023. He's from Priceville. He was proud of the fact that Priceville's number five. So you got Warrior. This is in order. Warrior, Kimberly, Southside, Hamilton, Priceville, Fairhope, Dothan, Rainesville, Glencoe, and Margaret. I am not familiar with Margaret, Alabama. Are you?
I am not.
I thought that I was sort of like James Spann, and I knew where all these little cities were, but I apparently am not. I need to find out where Margaret, Alabama is. Anyway, yeah. Hey, thanks, Sam. Appreciate you sending that in. But yeah, going back to that whole scenario of the well in the desert. So, I mean, I can, and a well can change people's lives too, by the way. In Afghanistan, we would commission the digging of wells for former Taliban villages, trying to sort of bring new life there. And just, you talk about changing people's day to day. Suddenly they have water. I mean, first of all, you look at it and go, why do you live here? There is no water. Why'd you build? How'd you build the village here? Some will say, though, that the water just dried up. I had one older Afghan man, and I'll never forget this. He truly believed that the Americans had brought a new day, and we had. But he looked at me and he said, for I think it was 7 years. He said, for 7 years the Taliban ruled Afghanistan, and it did not rain, and the Americans came and it rained. Mm. It's just like, wow. I'm not going to argue. I'm just going to say, well, yes, sir, and bless the Lord. But yeah. So, all right. So, listen, I guess my whole point in that is just be mindful of the fact that, and I have to remind myself of this. I was talking to Charlene about it this morning. I have to remind myself of this. God can just show up at the last second, and it all makes sense. Don't forget he's done that in the past. And so, as we're heading into the Easter weekend, I just want to encourage you. Just be mindful of the fact that God just shows up, and he usually has a perfect timing that we could not have foreseen because the self wants it done yesterday, and his perfect timing usually winds up showing self that self really didn't have a good plan. So anyway, there's that. Boomer, did you ever get our bracket winners?
The bracket winners have yet to respond.
Come on. Except for Ellis. We got Ellis's stuff.
Ellis's are, yep, shipped out, I believe.
Which, by the way, we forgot to mention the number one winner has more than just the t-shirt and the mug and all that. There's a cool set of coasters.
Yep. Yeah. The coasters.
And they're deal. They're the real deal.
They are the real deal. They're pretty cool.
These are laser etched into slate right side logo coasters. I mean, they're the awesome. Winner of this bracket is just getting like swag city.
Swag. Come on. Just all they got to do is respond.
Yeah. Come so on, we, bracket
so we got
winners.
Mason Dillinger. Dillinger. Ah, yeah. Oh, I did it again. Mason Dillinger and Michael. Are the number one and the number two.
Who was it? Was it Brian today called in and said, I want to identify as Mason
yes,
Dillinger.
Yes, it was.
No, it doesn't work that way. You can't. Well, I know I don't because I ended up like 76th or something on the list. It was ridiculous. And how far down was McQueen when it was over with?
I think she was either 10 or 11 is where she ended up at. Yeah.
Dang. Does she even watch basketball?
No, she does not.
I mean, I don't watch basketball a lot, and my scores reflected it. She watches it not at all, and would almost won.
Exactly. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, God. All right, listen, we got some good stuff laid on for you. I'm going to come right back. We're going to switch into number one of the Triple Dipper. We're going to cover down on, you know, why it's so important to actually have local leadership that matches what you say you want in D.C. I mean, Why are we worried about what our congressman is going to do if we're not even worried yet about what our local school boards, city councils, and mayors do and say? Because if we've learned anything in the last few years, it's apparently that mayors had more control than we ever dreamed. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama. I'm talking about from way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. All right, I'm in number one of the Triple Dipper. I'm calling it local leaders. So I'm going to say some things that sound obvious, but I want to condense them into one place, which is going to make them sound maybe a little bit more emphatic. Who you elect as mayor governs your life in a big way. I don't mean like a little bit. Like, mayors are responsible for everything from whether your trash gets picked up to your policing on the streets to, you know, pushing for things like, are you going to have an occupational tax? Do they increase your local sales tax? Because, yeah, some of that sales tax is local. I mean, all these things. How about your business licenses? How about whether or not you've got a crime-infested city with defund the police, or whether you've got, you know, a mayor who wants to shut down businesses and make people wear masks during COVID? We've seen it all in the last few years. Who you elect as a mayor, in my opinion, is every bit as important as who you elect as president of the United States. You can have a crazy mayor like Joe Biden. Excuse me, a crazy president like Joe Biden. I wish all he was a mayor. But you can have a crazy president like Joe Biden with policies that are running the nation into the ground in some ways. But you can still have an enclave where you live that is reasonably secure, run with conservative policies, and gives you a place to turn to and lay your head at night without having to wonder if all those policies from D.C. are getting amplified in your mayor's office or not. So here we are. Here we are. Who's your mayor? Who is the person who sits and presides? I don't care if it's the smallest town in the entire state, or if it's, you know, what is now the biggest city in this case is Huntsville. Right behind that is Birmingham, which barely beats out Montgomery, and then of course Mobile, and then you've got Tuscaloosa. They call them the Big Five mayors. There's the Big Five. Then you have what they call the Big Ten. You add in the other next five, and then so on and so on. You have different classes of municipalities. When I was a state senator, the smallest community in my district was Ridgeville. Ridgeville, where the mayor won the election by a vote of 19 to 12. Yeah. Some of my favorite communities in my district were places like Center, Steele, Altoona. I mean, I had lots of great communities. Southside, Glencoe. And leadership makes a difference. It really does. I remember Mayor Gilchrist of Glencoe became one of my favorite people. Mayor Nash out in Altoona, one of my favorite people. Mayor Wilkie up in Center. These were folks who it wasn't even their full-time job. But they did things that ran their cities, their little towns, in such a way that it made a difference. I will never forget. Okay, here's a story before I go too far down the road in these pieces that I've got. So Mayor Gilchrist, a Vietnam veteran, a former paratrooper, the 173rd Airborne Brigade, loves the Lord, got a great testimony. Mayor Gilchrist of Glencoe, nickname was Peanut. Everybody knew him as Peanut. And Mayor Peanut Gilchrist, one day, they got a letter. He had out there in front of City Hall, they had the American flag, the state flag, the Christian flag, and a POW/MIA flag. And they flew every day. And then and then one day, inexplicably, he gets a letter from the Freedom From Religion Foundation saying that there was somebody in the community who wanted to anonymously complain that they felt threatened by the fact that the Christian flag was being flown in front of City Hall in Glencoe, Alabama. Really? Doesn't seem like it's ever bothered anybody before. Thriving little community. Now that Christian flag is threatening somebody. So Mayor Gilchrist thought this through, and he thought, you know what? Right next to City Hall is First Baptist Church of Glencoe. Their parking lot butts up against the parking lot and really actually butts up against the flagpole area. And so the mayor got with the leadership of the church, and he sold them the little bitty strip of land where the flags are. And the Freedom From Religion Foundation had nothing to say at that point because suddenly the flags that still look like they're flying in front of City Hall are actually owned by the church. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it, Freedom From Religion Foundation. But that's the kind of thing that when an organization is run by someone with some measure of backbone and leadership and conservative values, you can find that things rock on pretty well. And then you can find that when liberal progressives get hold of even a mayor's office, they can run that sucker into the ground. and how well your streets are, you know, perceived in terms of being safe or well-paved or clean, or whether or not you're going to wind up having your kids walk down a sidewalk feeling threatened, or homeless encampments, you know, taking up space where the farmer's market used to be. All those things wind up getting controlled very often through City Hall. Who you elect as a mayor makes a big, big, big hairy difference. So here's a piece from the Daily Signal. Daily Signal reports just a couple months ago, 27 of the top 30 crime-ridden cities are run by Democrats. So that's a pretty scathing indictment when you consider, okay, 27 out of 30. What are we looking at there? Is that like a 96%? Anyway, a new report shows that Democrat policies in cities and counties are responsible for rising crime rates, even in otherwise red states. A classic example would be like Birmingham is a blue city in the middle of an overall red state. Birmingham is now one of the highest per capita murder rates in the nation. Oh, by the way, run by Liberal Mayor Randall Woodfin. The Heritage Foundation released a 19-page report entitled The Blue City Murder Problem that includes analysis on crime data and explores who's responsible. Those on the left know their soft-on-crime policies have wreaked havoc in the cities where they have implemented those policies, said the authors of the report. They went on to say, it's not hard to understand why reforms like ending cash bail, defunding the police, refusing to prosecute crime, letting thousands of convicted felons out of prison early, significantly trying to cut the prison population, and other progressive ideas have led to massive spikes in crime. As of June, here you go, you ready for this? As of June of 2022, the top three cities with the highest homicide rates include Chicago with 304, Philadelphia with 240, New York with 197, all Democrat run. It also highlighted the fact that 27 of the top 30 cities with the highest murder rates were all run by Democrat mayors. 14 of the 30 cities with the highest murder rates have George Soros-backed or Soros-inspired prosecutors. It's just, it goes on and on. So what I'm saying is, who you elect as mayor, well, it makes a difference. Well, we've seen some things happen. Liberal Mayor Randall Woodfin, right here in Birmingham. I want to remind you who he is and where he came from. Just elected in, what, 2017? Extolled the virtues of Liberal Mayor Randall Woodfin, did CNN. In a piece I've got here that says, a Bernie Sanders-backed candidate just got elected mayor in the Deep South. They were so excited. Randall Woodfin, it says, scored an upset when he won and beat the two-term Democrat mayor of Birmingham, Alabama, to become the youngest mayor, he was 36 at the time, in the Magic City in more than 100 years. A lady named Nina Turner, who's the head of an organization called Our Revolution, which is an organization that was founded by Bernie Sanders, was an active presence for Woodfin in his race. Sanders recorded a robocall, Bernie Sanders did, recorded a robocall that went out on one particular day saying that Woodfin would fight for racial justice and sanctuary city status for Birmingham, even a Medicare for All plan at the city level. And he sent out, Bernie Sanders did, a tweet urging people to go to the polls and then congratulating Woodfin on his victory. Even although Woodfin had actually been a Hillary Clinton supporter during her election campaign in 2016. For decades, the article says, Birmingham has been a blue city and a red state. And at 36 years old, Woodfin is one of the youngest politicians in the state. And I'm going to tell you, on his watch, the population dropped such that the census came out and said that Birmingham is no longer the biggest city in the state. On his watch, crime has gone up. On his watch, business has gone down. On his watch, things like the World Games came and didn't do that well and left a pile of debt. Now, I will go ahead and say the World Games was probably hampered to some degree by the closing days of COVID. But you're looking right now at a classic example. Even in a red state, you can have an incredibly liberal mayor. Backed by Bernie Sanders. Gonna make it a sanctuary city. How about this from 1819 News? You remember this? Right here in Alabama. Incredibly disheartened, say Montgomery leaders, who demand answers from their mayor, Stephen Reed. By the way, Stephen Reed, mayor of Montgomery, if you're not familiar, his dad is Joe Reed, who is the longtime leader of the teachers union. And, oh, by the way, is also the longtime leader of the state Democratic Party. Huge liberal. And now Montgomery Mayor Stephen Reed, Joe Reed's son, got caught on a recording just cussing, just making a, just having a fit, saying how he didn't need the black vote, bashing economic investments in Montgomery, bashing Maxwell Air Force Base, Governor Ivey, all of it. Just swearing and discussing his perceived lack of need for the black vote, even though he himself is a black man. Unbelievable. It got so bad, 1819 broke this story. I love this. They broke the story, and it's one of those things that nobody else was going to run with that story until it became a story and they had to. Next thing you know, everybody's writing about it. Mayor Stephen Reed had to come out and give an explanation, but that's who you got. And he's presiding right now over policies that are hurting the city of Montgomery, our state capital. But it's everywhere, man, I'm just telling you. New Orleans is now the murder capital of the nation. That's a title that it earned. Story came out on NBC News just last month. New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell faces a possible, well, she did. She actually, the recall election was not successful. But it's so bad that in liberal New Orleans, the people were trying to recall the liberal mayor. That bad. And they came pretty close. Says uncollected trash overflows in the streets. She contends with allegations that she had an affair with a member of her security detail. There's also allegations, by the way, that she has abused a city-owned apartment by giving it to family members to stay in. There's also other things about very high expense, expenses for clothes and hair and nails and all that for her in her official capacity. And yet, the big issue is the people don't feel safe in their own city anymore. They don't. Homicides in New Orleans increased 144% in the last couple of years. I mean, 144%. By the end of the year, it says last year, a total of 265 homicides in the city. And they're now named as the murder capital of the nation. And they've got a LaToya Cantrell, who one person said, she is not a manager. She is not good for the city. She has mismanaged the office of the mayor of New Orleans so badly. We got to get somebody in there that's going to be able to put the house back in order. But they're starting to wonder, how far is it going to go before we get that? Well, think about who you put in office. All right, Boomer, take us to a break right now. I'm doing this whole section on local leaders. Think about the ones that run your city. What do you know about them? Hopefully, you got a chance to actually be a part of the selection process. Because who runs your city hall is sometimes just as important as who sits in your governor's office or, for that matter, the White House. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We got more of this. We'll be right back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. I'm in number one of the Triple Dipper, calling it local leaders, and why I think it's so important to make sure that you know who's in your city hall, because daggum, man. I mean, during COVID, we saw things, there were things that, Democrat Mayor Walt Maddox was doing in Tuscaloosa that, Republican conservative Mayor Tony Kennan in Orange Beach is like, ain't going to happen here. I mean, it's amazing what happens when you've got conservative leadership, even in your city hall. Like, you got this. So look around the nation right now, things that are happening. Mayor Ted Wheeler getting ticked off just last week when the governor of Texas was calling him out. So Ted Wheeler, notoriously liberal in Portland, Oregon. I mean, just like, wow, so bad recently. The crime and the local leadership has gotten so bad that Walmart decided to close two of its locations and just pull out. There is no Walmart in Portland now. I mean, when Walmart leaves, you know it's bad. The heck? I mean, all that's left is what? Pawn shops? I don't know. But anyway, Walmart recently announced the stores at Hayden's Meadows and Eastport Plaza in Portland would permanently close on March 24th. decision made on several factors, including profitability. Well, profitability is affected because they've got retail theft going on like rampantly in Portland. And the, of course, this is one of those defund the police kind of locations. This is what happens, said the Texas governor, when cities refuse to enforce the rule of law. It allows the mob to take over. Businesses can't operate in that environment, and people can't live in it. Well, of course, Ted Wheeler pushed back. Governor Abbott, how about the stores that have closed in Texas? Yada, yada. Well, I got news. No. You need to own it, Mayor. You need to own it. How about San Francisco, where there was another high-profile murder, random stabbing? The guy who was the founder of Cash App, a major, you know, online high-tech app, was just murdered in the street. And I'm pretty sure it was such a random thing. It's gotten so bad now, Mayor London Breed, who was all about the defund the police thing until it began to spiral out of control. Right now, San Francisco is in drastic state. There are so many people that don't want to come back into downtown San Francisco to work. They're choosing to work remotely that it's crushing local businesses who are trying to stay open because nobody's there to eat lunch. Nobody's there to shop. And it's getting into this spiral. Well, Mayor London Breed, you remember her. She's the one who, by the way, during COVID and masking and all the mandates she was screaming about and telling people to get on board, then they found her in a nightclub dancing without a mask on and a drink in her hand. Wow. The mayor, who's been known as a defund the police advocate, recently called on the federal government for assistance to help her with streets that are ridden with drugs, violence, and homelessness. She says the scale of the problem is beyond our local capacity. She built the problem. She built the problem, and now she wants the federal government to come bail her out. San Francisco Police Officer Association Lieutenant Tracy McCray is one of those critics. He called out the San Francisco mayor for hating law enforcement, while noting that officers are a critical key in curbing the city's issues. And he went on to talk about it. But anyways, she talks about the fact that she needs help with the open-air drug market as fentanyl-related overdoses continue to soar in San Francisco, saying we need support from the Department of Justice. I got news. You need to start being hard on crime, because right now the San Francisco Police Department, they are understaffed by 541 officers. Can you imagine? That's an entire battalion, man. They are down 541 officers from what they say they need just to do the jobs. Well, is it any wonder? Lastly, we're going to talk about Chicago here in a minute with my buddy Scott Stantis. But Seattle, yeah, Seattle. Seattle's got issues. Seattle's a beautiful city, but Seattle's got issues. And right now, in the middle of everything going on in Seattle with crime, with Antifa, with, you know, the inability to keep the homeless situation at bay. The mayor, Bruce Harrell, has proposed a $970 million project to provide low-income housing for the homeless. $970 million. The only way to do it, by the way, is to levy taxes against local homeowners so they can build homes for the homeless. I don't think he understands how this works. But it's not going to work. It would cost the median Seattle homeowner about $380 a year. Maybe that doesn't sound huge. When you spread it out, you're looking at, what is this, like $250 a month, something like that. But the reality is you're talking about taxing people who are doing the right thing in order to put a roof over the heads of people who are doing the wrong thing, and it gets worse from there. $970 million proposal, and nobody knows how it's going to work. Put somebody in your city hall and see how it goes. All right, folks, stay tuned. We're coming right back with Scott Stantis, syndicated cartoonist from the Chicago Tribune. We'll see what he thinks about Chicago's new mayor. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm good. Give me 1 second to, I've got my mic hooked up, but somehow the earbuds.
Cool.
Okay, how's that?
That's good right there.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And yeah, like that dude just said, solid conservative, just plain right. Well, I'm going to kind of wrap up this whole first section of the Triple Dipper. I'm talking about local leaders. I'm talking about what it means to have someone in your city hall who maybe reflects your values, right? Somebody who's going to actually govern at the local level, which, make no mistake, it's still true governance. And I'm a firm believer that what comes out of your city hall sometimes will impact you as much or more than what comes out of your governor's office or out of D.C. for that matter. So without having spent too much time on this, I do want to say that I've got a buddy who's going to come on, and he's got the coolest job maybe in the world. So my friend Scott Stantis is coming on. He is a bona fide syndicated political cartoonist, many, many moons at the Chicago Tribune. He's got a cartoon strip called Prickly City, which is also internationally syndicated. It's in over 100 newspapers. He's also one of the dudes on a podcast of his own called the DMZ America podcast, and he lives back here in Alabama. He's my buddy Scott Stantis. Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I woke up here in Alabama, so that the rest of the day is just gravy. I tell you, no, I'm serious. I tell people this; they think I'm nuts. I mean, I, honest to goodness, we need to work hard on the image of the state around the world because, you know, I could have left. I left the Chicago Tribune as a full time employee about three years ago, and could have moved literally anywhere in the world. And I came back here to Alabama because I fell in love with it. Worked at the Birmingham News. Remember those kids? Ink on paper.
Birmingham News. Yeah, like paper that actually come off on your hands when you picked it up in the driveway.
Yeah, it was charming. They used to actually cover news. That was even more charming. But when I worked there for 13 years, I was, you know, a guy like most people, came to Birmingham with a lot of trepidation. And in short order, just fell in love with it. And every single person, Phil, I bring down here kicking and screaming, wants to move here.
Yeah, but we don't want them to know. We don't let the secret out, man. This place will be overrun with carpetbaggers. We don't need that.
Oh, we need as many Californians as we can. Oh, wait.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. Wait, man, let me ask you. So Chicago Tribune, you guys at the Tribune actually endorsed the dude that did not win the election for mayor.
Happens a lot.
But in this case, I was pulling for him. I mean, when I looked at the choices, I thought, man, I don't want anybody but that guy. You just got rid of the scariest looking, scariest acting mayor in the history of the world, Lori Lightfoot. Yeah. She needed to go. But yes. Then you got somebody in there who's, I don't know, man, looks like his policy positions might be way more liberal even than hers. Bernie Sanders is excited.
Bernie Sanders is Ronald Reagan compared to this guy. Brandon Johnson is the mayor-elect of Chicago. Young guy, nice guy, really has a great family. But listen to this resume. He was a former school teacher. He was active in the union, became a lobbyist for the union, CTU, Chicago Teachers Union. The same union, Phil, that has struck, and I'm not kidding, over the last 5 years, every 16 months.
Oh, my God.
I'm not making that up.
Holy cow.
And by the way, their school system, you know, it's almost as if the former lobbyist for AEA was elected governor of Alabama. Wow. You know what's in the mail now. When it comes to crime, which is out of control. I was in Chicago over the Christmas holidays. Wanted to visit friends, had some business. I've never felt unsafe in my part of the city. And Phil, I got to tell you, my first day I got accosted on the subway system.
Really?
Crazy guy. I was hanging out with some friends, goes barreling through us, and we didn't move because, you know, men, and we don't get out of, and there was no reason to, and he goes barreling through. He says, oh, now it's on. Now it's on. I'm going, oh boy, here we go. The only way we got out of it was he started screaming at us, and then he goes, and it's all because of that right there. Look at that. And we turn our heads and Phil, there's nothing there.
Wow.
The crazy, which, yeah, I mean, Brandon Johnson's talking about expanding health, mental health care systems. That's absolutely right. The drug pandemic, especially fentanyl, is tearing so many communities up. Chicago, you know, doesn't escape that. So you have that, and he's talking about drug interdiction. Those are good things, and those are things in the long run that should work. But the short run is you have virtually no police presence in the city. A year and a half ago, Phil, over 900 police officers, Chicago police officers, retired.
And 900?
900. Wait. There's going to be math here, folks. I'm sorry. But the academy, the police academy, graduated 7.
What? They lost 900 through natural attrition, I guess you'd say, and they gained 7.
Yes. Well, they lost it because of, you know, because defund. Crazy stuff like that. They lost it because they elected a mayor in Laura Lightfoot who did not like the police and was very vocal in her dislike of the police. She doesn't like anything, quite frankly.
Yeah,
she was really unpleasant.
So there you go.
And full disclosure, I was on the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune when Laura Lightfoot ran the first time, and I voted to endorse her. She gave every indication that she was going to be a breath of fresh air,
wow,
break up the machine which controlled that city.
How'd that work out for you?
Oh boy, oh boy. Oh man. What a disappointment. She, I don't know if you or your listeners know this. She won the runoff against the head of the Cook County Democratic Party and the president of the Cook County Commission. And Lori Lightfoot beat her 75% to 25%. I mean, this was like, you couldn't walk into office with better karma. You just couldn't do it. And boy, did she spend it fast and flushed it right down the old crapper. It was very hard to watch. Brandon Johnson, even my liberal friends in Chicago are kind of going, uh-oh, because taxes aren't going to go down. The tax burden for everyone is so onerous. The fees for everything are onerous. We did a story once, Phil, what it would take. Here's why you and I are conservatives. And I know this is why many of your listeners are. Woman on the south side of Chicago, single mom. She happens to be good with hair. Wants to open up a hair salon. Chicago Tribune a couple of years ago did a story on how much it would cost her to open it in terms of fees and licensing fees and maybe a few kickbacks here or there. Guess how much that number was. This is a poor single mom in the south side of Chicago hair salon. Phil, guess how much the average cost would be.
I'm scared to even ask. Go ahead and tell me.
$20,000.
God. That's just
I mean,
that's not before you even open the doors. That's just $20,000 just to be allowed the opportunity to work in the city of Chicago.
Exactly. And that's the construct of Chicago, is that they tax you, they fee at every single turn. And if they don't like your habit, for instance, and listen, smoking cigarettes, I don't smoke, terrible, awful, filthy habit. A pack of cigarettes in downtown Chicago today is $15.
What? A pack?
Yeah. a pack. That's, listen, I'm not, you know, like I said, I'm no fan of smoking. But here's what killed the election for the aforementioned president of the Cook County Commission is that she instituted an additional tax. I think it was a 15-cent tax on soft drinks because, you know, we should all be drinking well water and eating macrobiotically, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Lab-grown meat. Yeah, go ahead.
So getting back to the election, if you break down the maps, the law and order vote, came primarily from the white population. The black communities voted for Brandon Johnson. The Latino communities, Chicago's kind of a third and a third and a third, Phil. It's white, black, and Latino. Neither side really solidified support from the Latino community. So that was a non-starter. But it's...
This was a runoff election, too. How was turnout? Was turnout low?
Of course. They want it that way. First of all, they have it. I mean, think about it. They have it in March in Chicago. You ever been to Chicago, Phil?
Yeah.
I've been in Chicago when it snowed in May. Oh. So, I mean, this is on purpose. This is so... And this is why Brandon Johnson, if I could get into the tall weeds real quick, that's why one of the main reasons Brandon Johnson won. All the experts, myself included, thought, yes, crime is a huge issue. Here's a guy in Paul Vallis who's actually addressing it in a serious manner. I thought he'd win by 5 or 6 points. Brandon Johnson is a tool of this Chicago Teachers Union, which is a massive, massive union and has a massive, massive political arm that motivates and gets a ton of people out there to walk the streets, go door to door, hand out, drive people to the polls. I mean, it's get out the vote. And this, if you have a low voter turnout election, you know that that's what won this for him. And that's what won it for him. So you've got a guy who is, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 80% of his funding came from unions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Bernie Sanders on stage with him to hug his neck when he won the election.
Well, there's that. I mean,
well, so your thoughts, I mean, you've seen it in Chicago. You're back here now. Of course, you live in the Birmingham area, so you're seeing the most liberal mayor within, one of the most liberal mayors in the Southeast. But your thoughts on my position earlier that who you put in a city hall really does drive the train on a lot of what you experience as a citizen.
Oh, it's massive. This is the day-to-day stuff. You know, we watch the stuff from the U.S. Congress or Senate, or the White House, that's important. But the stuff that directly affects you day to day comes from City Hall and County Commissions. And that is where you're looking at Birmingham. And, you know, I'm glad that the neighborhood are being addressed, I guess. But I think those people would probably be far better served if their streets were safer and if their schools were better.
Yeah.
I talked about the AEA earlier, Alabama Education Association, the teachers union for the state. Alabama came in 52nd in the latest math scores.
Yeah.
That means we're behind Guam, Phil.
Yes, it's unreal.
Not to disparage Guam. I'm sure they're fine people, but...
they didn't put a man on the moon, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they didn't have the Guam flag planted on the moon. I'm sorry. I don't know why that makes me giggle. What you're seeing is in blue run cities. San Francisco is a great example. If you've ever been there, I am so sorry because it is absolutely filthy. It is absolutely, I think, the worst city in America. But the same holds true for Chicago. New York now just elected a former police officer, but even you talk to friends who live there, they're dealing with the same thing. You have any time you have blue leadership in the metro area, to your point, Phil, that, you know, these are the issues, the day-to-day issues, the bread and butter issues, the crime, the public safety issues, they fail because can I tell a quick story?
We got to take a break. If you want to come tell the story right after the break, we'll do that. How about that?
Okay, great. Right, if you don't mind.
Boomer, take us to a break, brother. We will do that right now. We're with Scott Stantis, syndicated political cartoonist, many, many, many moons with the Birmingham News and the Chicago Tribune, giving us his perspective on the recent election of the new mayor and also, by the way, what city halls can actually mean to you. You guys stay tuned. We'll come right back and wrap that up. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, going back to phones right now with my buddy Scott Stantis. Scott is a syndicated cartoonist, political cartoonist, who also, by the way, has a comic strip called Prickly City, which is in 100 newspapers around the world. Scott, you were about to tell me a story related to this whole local leadership thing.
Well, local leadership, you know, particularly with liberal DAs, and this is what happens with liberal DAs. George Soros and many of his many people like him have been underwriting the election of liberal DAs. And in the Chicago area, it's the job's called the Cook County State's Attorney. And you'll recognize the name. It's Kim Fox.
Oh, my gosh.
And Kim Fox never met a felon she didn't like. And the other problem is they have a justice system, a criminal justice system in Cook County. And to become a judge, it's a political appointment, and you have to, how do you get that degree? You have to draw the pirate on the back of the matchbook. That's pretty much how you get their degree. So the judges are awful. They're letting people go left and right because incarcerating people of color is not what is really primary what their job is. My idea would be if you're incarcerating bad guys, but here's an example of what can happen, Phil, and it's terrible, and I'll make it short. One day I'm looking through, I've got Chicago Tribune online on my computer. I look over and they've posted a picture of this just beautiful little boy, just big-eyed, beautiful, full of innocence and life. He's been murdered. Not just murdered, but it turns out that he was tempted to come into an alley where he was killed execution style.
Wow.
Turns out the guy who did it was a competing gang member to his father's gang. His father, by the way, never testified against this guy, just to give you how that world works.
Wow.
But the guy who committed this crime, this horrible, horrible crime, Phil, had been arrested 5 previous times for violent crime, had not served a single day in prison.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That's what liberal DAs get you.
That's what liberal DAs get you. That's what city halls get you that have opportunities for appointments. That's what happens when a populist sits idly by, though, and also lets it happen. And I you got to look at it and just wonder sometimes, what's it going to take for y'all to wake up and realize life sucks in your city right now, and it's because of who you keep putting back in that city hall. I don't know when it's going to change, but we only got about a minute and a half here left, Scott. But I think back to the 2010 elections in Alabama when we finally saw a flip of the state house from 136 years of Democrat rule to a Republican supermajority in one night. But what it took was some people who got together, made a plan, and said, we're tired of this, and we're going to make it. I don't know when Chicago or San Francisco or, for that matter, Portland or Seattle or New Orleans are ever going to get around to making that happen, but they better do it soon.
You bet, because Chicago's a great town, and it's breaking my heart to see it founder and fall into this morass. It's terrible.
Well, I guess the jury's still out on how Brandon Johnson will do, but the resume he brought with him does not bode well. But
it does not. No, sir. It is. Right. It's going to be a long 4 years for Chicago.
Hey, my brother, tell folks where they can find out more about you, your stuff, your podcast. Tell them how to go look you up.
Well, your podcast, DMZ America Podcast, you can get at any of your fine locations wherever you shop for your podcast. You can see my work at gocomics.com/Scott Stantis. That's one word. Or gocomics.com/Prickly City. You can go to the Chicago Tribune and go to the opinion section, see the work I do for them. And a new client, you can go to the Dallas Morning News and see the work I draw for them.
Whoop, whoop. All right. Whoop, whoop. I don't know. I think you and I both are of the belief that sleep is highly overrated.
Yes, yeah, we'll do plenty of that when we're dead.
All right, Scott Stantis, appreciate you, man. We'll have you back on again sometime soon.
Thanks, Phil. Enjoyed it.
Well, that was just cool. He does have, by the way, one of the coolest jobs. Boomer, just can you imagine?
I mean, drawing cartoons?
That's your
awesome
job. Of course, the thing is, he puts things together in such a way that you get, like, the whole thing about a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Yeah.
I mean, his work is so good. We need to commission him to do some kind of a political cartoon of Right Side Radio.
What if it was a Right Side cartoon in the newspaper every week? That would be fun.
I think we're on to something.
A ruffian cartoon.
I think we're on to something. All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, coming back with number 2 on the triple. Oh, no, we're not. We're coming back with Boomer and McQueen. Ah, we'll be right back. Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. And I'm talking about we covered down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama. From way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gaston, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. All right. I got questions because I got people in the room with me right now. Boomer and McQueen time. This is my favorite time of the week. All right.
It's time.
She does definitely bring something to the studio when she comes in, Boomer. I'll be honest.
Sunshine.
With you. Sunshine. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, she only says sunshine because that's what she was outside walking just now around
the sunshine.
The studio
in the sunshine.
Because it was sunshining.
It's also your enigmatic personality, McQueen.
That's what it is. Aww,
but shucks. It's Boomer and McQueen time. So here's the deal. I got these two folks right here who helped make the show go. They're the ones who are in the background and sometimes the foreground doing amazing things. And they're also the host of the other part of the Right Side Multiverse, the Right Life podcast, which you dropped another one yesterday, right?
Another
podcast. Yes, we did. Yesterday.
Yeah.
It's a fun one.
Which has got tons of people already chiming in and tuning in for the Right Life podcast with you guys. But this is our time together. So you got some whoops for me?
Here we go.
Hit it. All right, Boomer McQueen time. Okay, so here's my first question for you. I'm not sure I get it, but here's the deal. The March Madness, Final Four games, men and women. At the end of the women's game, LSU and who was that, Iowa? Who was it, LSU and
Iowa? Iowa, yeah.
LSU and Iowa. And Jill Biden, First Lady Jill Biden, she's making some kind of comments. And she basically says, you know, because it's kind of a customary, the winners come to the White House. Mm-hmm. And she says, I think we ought to, you know, that was LSU. And I think we ought to also, you know, maybe we should go ahead and invite both teams and have the Iowa team come also. And she has gotten more grief off of that. I mean, like, it's a viral slapback. Your thoughts on this, since you're both college athletes, what are your, all right, you start, McQueen. What are you thinking?
Well, my first instinct due to the era that we live in is the participation trophy award.
Oh,
I feel like that's kind of that's how my first like when I first jump I'm just going, oh my gosh, like let's just have the winners there. That's all we need. Let's teach people how to lose.
If you lose, you don't get to come.
Yeah, that's how I feel. However, I did I did see on, I think it was on Instagram, there was an interview with one of the LSU players that apparently she was also asked to come to the locker room before they played, and they were like no, and they just denied her to come to the locker
room. They denied the first lady to come and
they
see them?
Denied.
They played.
I think Iowa and then accepted.
The girl goes, I don't know if Iowa let her come in or not, but that was all I saw.
Was that because it was a pregame and they were focused or because they just didn't want her to be there?
I'm going to go with the latter.
I was going to say they're focused.
They're focused.
And then you're like, nah.
All right, so your thoughts on her inviting both teams there, Boone?
Oh, snowflake. I mean, that's easy. For me, it's like, come on, man. This is not a participation. Let's go walk around the White House time. Let's just let everybody in. I want the championship team there. They deserve it. They did what they were supposed to do. They won out, and they get rewarded for it.
I got to tell you, you guys are mean.
Just saying.
Like, I say it nicely, though. He's just like, boom.
He's Boomer.
I don't like participation trophies.
No, I don't either.
Little one getting those little medals.
You made our two-year-old throw it away, right? I'm just kidding. He was four.
He was four at the time.
But you know what? Okay, so I get it. I do think that the winners are the ones that should go. I'm totally with that. But I feel like she's getting beat up for just trying to be nice and like being a grandma. She was just being Grandma Jill Biden.
Okay, if that's the case, she's just, you know, Jill Biden, just like Joe. She don't know what she's talking. They don't know what's worse. Now, I will say this. There's been other things that come out from LSU players that should not have come out.
Punks.
They just need to. They need to know their place. They are players, and they shouldn't speak out like that.
LSU, especially what's that one player's name?
Angel something
like Angel or Angela. She was the one that did the interview about not having her come to the locker room.
And it should just be, you know, you're a player. You should be, you know, obviously excited that you won, but you also need to know your place as a player of a university.
Yeah.
You're not an NBA player or in it.
You represent a brand.
Exactly. You
absolutely. And she's been nothing but a punk. Well, I look at the whole thing and I just think that Jill Biden was being sweet, was being a little gullible, was being a little bit, you know, snowflakeish, but she is getting just hammered right now.
She is.
All right. All right. Let's move on to another question here. Here you go. I've been an elected official, and I can remember when I got elected, it was funny to me. I realized, not that I didn't think it before, but I suddenly realized how normal these people are who are holding public office. Well, I say that in general. But what is y'all's perception of elected officials in general? Are they approachable? Are they accessible? Does their party affiliation change your perspective on whether you think they would be approachable, tell me your thoughts. Boomer goes first this time.
When I was younger, when I was younger, I would be like, yes, I would not want to walk up to somebody because I was like, ooh, they're elected official. Nowadays, I understand they are people too. They put their shorts and pants on the same way I do, and they're accessible because they are. It sounds bad if I say working for me, but they're working for us. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, working. You know, to better benefit where we live.
I think that's true. Well, okay, McQueen first. What you got?
Yeah. I think there's kind of a little bit of a difference between being approachable and accessible, because I think some are. I think a lot probably are really approachable. I think sometimes the accessibility is a little more difficult just with things like, okay. I mean, obviously it depends on how high up you're going, you know, as far as these elected officials and just with, you know, security or just different their scheduling and things like that. So I think it can be a little bit different. And like my view doesn't necessarily change based on political party. I think it really just depends on the person. But I think also just kind of flipping this back to, I think, well, similar to what Boomer said, I don't feel like when we don't make the effort, they're really not approachable or accessible. And I think that's kind of where I used to kind of come from that point too, where they're not approachable, they're not accessible, but I wasn't making any effort but what the local ones, I mean, they're right here. I mean, I've been sitting in restaurants where the new mayor walked in and had a conversation with him because the person I was with knew him. And it's like, you know, but in the past I would have never thought that I could have a conversation with someone like that. So
yeah,
you just kind of have to, I think, put yourself out there sometimes.
I think that's true. I think too often people have the perception of the elected official as that person who's out there, but they're not. They're right here.
They're right here. Yeah.
And especially at the local level, you're right. They go to the same restaurants. They go to the same churches. They go to, you know, the same shopping malls, whatever. And people need to not put them on some kind of a pedestal. I mean, it's very cool. They're serving in whatever capacity, even if they don't serve the way I wish they would. The fact that they put themselves out there, and by the way, having run for office, it's scary to put your name on the line. I mean, it's like, okay, it's not just I'm hoping you'll think that I'll do a good job. It's you're voting on me, you know, and that can be daunting. So getting out there and running for office is sometimes a big deal. I don't care if you're running for dog catcher,
right?
But they are not anything but normal people who just have an abnormal job.
Yeah, and I think you make so many sacrifices too when you're in that position that. And you want to be recognized as a normal person and not, you know, kind of having people scared of you or whatever.
Well,
so.
Some do. Some like to be recognized as special.
And, yeah, that's true.
And on the local level, a lot of people don't realize that they have other jobs as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's very true. You know? True.
And
yeah.
So, I mean, again, they're working for you.
To be our voice, yeah.
You know, they should want to do a good job for you, but they also have other jobs. It's not their only thing.
Even in Montgomery, the entire legislative branch is part-time.
Mm-hmm.
We called it my full-time, part-time job.
Full-time, part-time.
My full-time, part-time job. But yeah.
And I didn't actually know that until a few years ago.
What's amazing, you know, I thought I understood the systems down there and what was happening in the state house. Then I got elected and I went down there. I was like, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I also had people that I'd be going to Montgomery to do my thing and they'd say, so how much time do you spend in DC? Well, really none. You know, I went there on vacation. It's kind of cool. But anyway, all right, you guys, that's a perfect place to stop. Mm-hmm. We'll take a break right there. We'll come right back. I'm with Boomer and McQueen. Oh, these two, they just do stuff, man. They make it work. Boomer McQueen, go into a break.
In a second.
And we will, like, okay, I just bragged on you, Boomer. And now you just
big
hit
stuff happen.
Would you hit the fail button over there? What does happen?
We're going early, so I have to do like three more steps.
All right, you guys. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio with Boomer and McQueen, and we will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative. Just plain right. Making it cool to be a conservative. So back right now, my favorite segment of every single week. We call it Boomer and McQueen. And let's do the whoop-whoops again.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. All right, so we're back with you guys. All right, so we already ran through two questions. That kind of went quicker than usual.
Fast.
So now we're down to that part where I have to sit back in fear and trepidation to see what kind of question you want to ask me. So you going first, McQueen?
I'll go.
All right.
Yeah, I'm ready. So I think it was yesterday it was announced that Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Oh, yeah.
Jr., I believe, is running for a Democrat candidate for the presidency. So I would love your thoughts on that, because there seems to be a lot of things that I – or some things, I should say, that I agree with, and I would just love your thoughts on
Well, it's been a long time since a Democrat sitting president has drawn a primary. Now, Joe Biden's not said officially he's running yet, right? So everybody believes he is. But I think he's also holding on because he doesn't want to be seen as a lame duck because he announced he's not going to stay. But that being said, he's not announced. But usually there's this respect thing about, well, we'll wait and see what the guy in the seat does first.
Mm-hmm.
No. Right now you got one wackadoo, Marianne Williamson. She's a wackadoo. But read up on her. She's fun.
Okay.
But anyway, she...
She's fun.
She's running. I don't mean a little bit. I mean like, wow. Like, what you smoking, Marianne? But she's already announced she's running. And then on top of that now, we have, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who, he's a lawyer. He's the nephew, by the way, of former President JFK,
right?
Yeah. So he brings that Kennedy name. And it's going to be odd. But the first thing that strikes me is, I mean, I don't know if he's going to have the fundraising. I don't know if he's going to have the chutzpah. He certainly has the name. But is he going to be able to beat the sitting Democrat for a primary run? But the other piece of this is, oh, daggum, the sitting Democrat drew a primary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like
it's a big deal.
Within your own party. That's a big, hairy deal.
Yeah.
Ooh.
There's my thoughts on that.
Huh. So it just got interesting, basically.
It just got in. And
it
Marianne,
wasn't interesting enough.
And
yeah.
Marianne Williams is going to make. I mean, Marianne Williamson, she might be there with a crystal ball and a voodoo doll on stage. I mean, I'm just telling you, this. She's a wackadoo.
Oh,
you got one for me, buddy?
I got one for you.
Oh,
so,
what you
okay,
got?
So hitting a little close to home for McQueen and I.
Yeah.
We lived in Nashville.
You did.
Riots at the Capitol.
Oh, yeah.
But the question is. I just saw they're trying to expel the three House reps there at the House. So, and the first one that said that they were expelling is House Representative Jones.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Well, so first of all,
I know we already talked about the insurrection.
Yeah,
2.0,
insurrection 2.0. But you know what, though? If anybody's guilty of potential insurrection activities, it's those three. So here's the odd piece. They are claiming that they are victims of a Republican MAGA attempt to control the flow of things. No, there are House rules. They are sworn in to uphold and defend the Constitution of both their state and nation, right? And they are also required ethically to abide by the rules of their body. In this case, it's the House of Representatives in Tennessee. So the other day, Insurrection 2.0, the state house in Tennessee was filled up with protesters. And these three knuckleheads decided to actually take a megaphone onto the floor of the house and disrupt the proceedings, shouting in a megaphone that they stand with gun rights activists and gun control activists and all this stuff. And basically, those three shut down the House of Representatives. They had to adjourn because they couldn't get any work done because they were protesting on the floor. Now, they're trying to make this play about how, oh, the speech of the people was being silenced. No, actually not. Nobody outside there protesting had any of their speech silenced. You knuckleheads shut down the House of Representatives, and you know you're not supposed to. So, yeah, they're voting on them one at a time. And I'm seeing where they just expelled the first one, not censured, not removed him from his committee, expelled him. So I don't know for how long. I don't think you can unelect somebody, but you can ban them from participation for a period of time according to those House rules.
Wow.
So I think they deserved it.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. If it had been Republicans, if it had been Republicans. I'd say they deserved it.
They deserved it. They broke the rules.
Yeah. Go out there and be an elected official. Don't be an activist on the state floor.
Right.
Vote how you want. Give your speeches, filibuster if you want to. You're not allowed to stand up there and protest on the House floor during the middle of proceedings with a megaphone and shut down everything that the state's business is supposed to be about. Mm. By God.
There you go.
All right. I like that one. All right. I'll tell you what. We got through a question from each of you. We got through two questions from me.
Flying.
And then when we have time, we go into stupidest story of the week. So who's got my stupid story? You Boomer.
We haven't gotten to do the stupid story in a while.
I know. So this is where.
That's because we usually get really riled up about all these other questions here.
All right.
So we just can't stop talking.
We set aside the serious business. Serious business.
Serious business.
And
we
set aside serious business and we look at the stupidest story of the week. Have you got one, Boomer?
I got one.
What you got?
All right. A New York patient, ambulance joyride ends with police spike. So what happened was, someone was picked up by the ambulance. Oh, yeah. Someone was picked up by the ambulance, taken to the hospital. They got their treatment and stuff, walked right out, and the ambulance was just sitting there with keys in it. So they decided to take it for a joyride.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were about 20 minutes or whatever into it. Obviously, the ambulance has GPS, so they found him, but he wouldn't pull over. So the police had to spike their own ambulance
their first responders had to spike the first responders.
Exactly.
That is crazy.
So it was a patient that took the ambulance.
You know what?
In New York.
How ungrateful is that?
How ungrateful.
Exactly. I mean, first of all, it's an ambulance paid for by your tax dollars. Yeah. Yes. And, oh, by the way, they just may have saved your life or somebody else's, and then you stole it, and now it's offline. And there's
offline. And, yeah, they can't go pick up anybody else that needs help.
Long did the chase last?
About 25 minutes, 20 minutes. Somewhere in there.
That's a serious chase.
That's a serious chase.
God. All right, you got one? Come on. Don't tell me you don't.
Well, I kind of do, but also it's like a previous one because we haven't done this in a little while. So, and now I'm not going to be able to find where it was. But basically, these kids, well, they were like high schoolers. They decided
silly
high school kids. They were inspired by the Kool-Aid Man. And you know, remember how the Kool-Aid Man used to like go through
run
walls?
Run through the walls, yeah.
And all this stuff?
Yeah.
So that was their inspiration. And they decided to try to do that. So they were doing that through, like, with their car, though. Crashing through fences and stuff like that.
Were they making the sound effect?
They didn't share if they were making the Kool-Aid Man.
They literally said they did this because they were inspired by the Kool-Aid Man.
Yes, that's correct.
They've been drinking some Kool-Aid, I'd say.
Kool-Aid.
Got a little something.
That was some college Kool-Aid, yeah.
Yeah, like they were underage on that Kool-Aid.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Would say.
So that was why they were crashing through fences was because the Kool-Aid Man.
Where was that, do you recall?
I think it was somewhere in like Texas. I can't remember exactly where, though.
I see some Texas boys doing that.
But
I can see some Alabama boys doing that.
I can see some Alabama boys doing that, too.
It usually starts off with, here, hold my beer, watch this.
Watch this, guys.
Nothing good ever starts off with, hey, hold my beer.
Or, I have a good idea. That's usually not good either. When you're drinking Kool-Aid.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
We made it through a whole segment.
We did. The That's whole
never
thing.
Happened.
Here, Boomer, hold my beer.
Hold
watch
my
this.
Beer.
Boomer, McQueen, love you guys. All right. That's one of my favorite, not one of, that's my favorite time of the week. All right, Boomer and McQueen, they've got a podcast, the Right Life podcast. You can pick it up. It's out there where all podcasts can be found. We're coming right back next on the Triple Dipper, Transamerica. Ooh, this is going to be interesting. We'll be right back.
Listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we are covering down on the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Tell you what, we have not had a chance to check the text lines in a while. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. I got a number of texts out here about things we've been talking about, some going back to Scott Stantis' interview. We got Drew from Huntsville, who wants to call me nasty names that I can't read online because he thinks I'm mean about homelessness. No, dude. Homeless people are not bad in and of themselves, Drew. Lighten up. But the reality is when you have a drug-induced situation with tent cities being camped out all over the sidewalks, defecation in the streets, businesses that are having to shut down, they don't know whether people can walk down the sidewalk safely, you got a problem. Are there people doing bad things in those homeless tents? Yeah, there really are. And don't kid yourself otherwise. Drew from Huntsville. All right, thanks for texting in. Who else we got here? Marcus from Huntsville. He texted in. He said, instead of Far Side comics, you ought to have a Right Side comic. I love it, he says. We're on to something, Boomer.
We are on to something.
You and I have more ideas than we have time or money.
Exactly.
Of course, that's been my problem for years. There's only 24 Lots hours of ideas, the day, though. And everything costs money. I don't know where to stop there. Chris from Gadsden says, I think any comic strip of y'all would look more like caricatures done at Six Flags over Georgia. Probably true, which,
yeah.
By the way, we did, I wanted one of those. Charlene and I, we had a trip to New York City some years back. I guess it's been about four or five years ago. And there was a guy doing caricatures. And I said, I want to do this. She goes, oh, don't spend money on that. I should have taken her advice.
Should have done it.
It looked like a caricature of two porn stars. And we just kind of rolled that thing up and let it go. It was just weird. It was not one that we were going to frame and hang on the wall back home and try to explain to the kids. It just wasn't going to work. Brian from Huntsville. By the way, you read some of these too if you want to, Boomer. Brian from Huntsville says, McQueen got robbed in the bracket.
McQueen did get robbed.
And then he goes, Jill Biden. Jill was outside the locker room just biding her time. Get it? Jill was biding
her time. I got it. Well, John from Huntsville.
Yeah.
He goes, hey, in my opinion, getting to meet Jill and Joe Biden is what you should give all the losing teams.
Here's your punishment. The president wants to see you now. Oh, my gosh. Okay. David from Huntsville. Lori Lightfoot and Barack Obama were obviously terrible candidates even before they won office. We'll have to forgive Scott Stantis and the Chicago Tribune for that one. But he says never, ever vote for a Kennedy. We'll see, man. I think it's going to be interesting. I think if Joe Biden wanted to, the machine would go ahead and put him in the primary poll position. But anyway, we'll see. Robert F. Kennedy is a name, though.
Mm. What? So Jack from Moulton, Alabama, was saying Angel Reese, the, you know, the LSU player.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Said she would rather go see Obama instead of the Bidens.
She did say that.
I did not know that.
I thought that was a total punk move.
Whoa.
I mean, so, you know, it's like that scene from, Band of Brothers at the end where he looks at Captain Sobel and says, Captain Sobel. You salute the rank, not the man. How about this? You were just invited to the White House, you punk Angel Reese. How about you stop being a punk and realize you don't speak for your team, get off of social media, remember your place, and just, you know, go be the gracious victor who's invited to the White House. Even if I were there as a conservative Republican, I would be honored to go to the White House because our team had earned it. Just go be a winner, please. Quit being a loser. Glenn from Bluntsville says, maybe we need to see if Jesse Jackson wants to run again. I saw Jesse Jackson's not doing well, by the way. I think he's near the end of his time, to be honest. And then, what do I got here? If I can get it open real quick. Oh my gosh. I don't even want to look at that twice. So I just got a meme from, Mike from Athens with some dude dressed up as a furry in bondage gear, claiming to be the new Budweiser Clydesdale. Lord. All right. We won't. No more description needed. I got a caller or no, bud? All right. Good. We're moving on. All right. Hey, tell you what. I'm going to move right into the next of the dippers. Transamerica, I'm calling it. I'm looking right now, by the way, on my screen here in the studio. This was tweeted out actually by Vivek Ramaswamy, who's a Republican running for president. And it's a picture of an MMA fight, mixed martial arts. An MMA fight, and it's supposed to be a women's MMA match, except the winner is actually a biological dude. But because dude identifies as a woman, he won that match. Not only did he win it, he fractured the real woman's skull. We're going to get somebody killed doing this. And I don't know when the general public is going to say, stop the madness now. But yeah, he points out, he says, a biological man fractures a woman's skull. We used to call this violence against women. Now we call it a victory for trans rights. Listen to the woman's voice at the end. The trans cult is a mental health epidemic in our country, and it needs to stop. And that's Vivek Ramaswamy. It's going to take somebody getting killed at this point before people begin to go, oh, maybe this is a bad idea. But the transgender movement right now really defies all odds, all description. The Pew Institute came out with a study like 6-8 months ago saying that their studies indicate that transgenderism is really only less than 1% of the population. Now, the homosexual population may be bigger, but transgenders who believe that they are not just gay, but they are in the wrong body and therefore they're going to switch. I'll just be different. I'll just defy biology and I'll be different. It doesn't work that way. This whole notion of I can't describe what a woman is. I watched a video yesterday. Matt Walsh from the Daily Wire, who has been, you know, making public appearances in support of his documentary, which has been making waves, man. And the documentary is called What is a Woman? He was actually at it. And by the way, he wasn't raving. He wasn't in any way, like kind of raging against the machine. He was giving a speech, and a transgender stood up. It's a dude, very obviously a dude, and just wanted to take him to task about why you don't want to say that I'm a woman. And his response was, well, first of all, you're not a woman. And secondly, he said, tell me why you think you are. And that's what it came down to. And the person could not. They could not describe why they think they – it was like – It was getting to the point of it was very uncomfortable, not just because the topic was weird. It was uncomfortable because the person was truly embarrassing themselves, trying earnestly to say, I just want to be honored for what I believe I am. And he said, but yeah, but you're not. And tell me why you think you are. And he was very calmly and patiently asking the questions, but the person could never answer them. But that's the thing. There is no legitimate answer. There is no way to take this in a direction that truly actually makes sense. They speak inside a bubble. And he said that. The guy did say, well, I've been affirmed by so many who in the transgender movement who tell me, yes, you really do appear to be a woman. And Matt Walsh says, but I can tell you, you don't, because when you stood up, I knew you were a man. And it just It's sad, really. And that video began to be sad. But that's where we are. But yet people are jumping on board. Why? So you can eventually get to the point that the team, you know, you sponsored actually killed a woman because you let men compete against women, or that you have people competing for jobs that, you know, women are losing out to, or that you have folks that are losing scholarships, women, because Title IX is no longer respected. I mean, at what point do we get back to the fact that you said obey the science during COVID? How about we obey the science when it comes to biology? I got a call on line one. Let me do that real quick. Sparky from Harvest. Hey, man, how you doing?
Hey, good show, everybody.
Thanks, man.
The whole thing's perplexing to me. Number one, politicians in the Socialist Democrat Party have realized by pandering to people who embrace the notion of the great, big, wonderful LGBTQEIEIO as a community, like some sort of monolithic large group of people who all think alike, it's so intellectually dishonest. And even I've got some gay friends that I'm in contact with from way back, from high school even, on social media and email, and they will admit that there's a mental disturbance and a mental illness with transgender, gender dysphoria. But they feel if they all stick together, they have a larger voice. And I appreciate that. I never really thought of that, but I told my really good friend, I said, "This is, you know, it's not, you're no more part of the community with those transgender people than you are with Navy SEALs. You know, you're worlds apart. You're a working professional. You're about to retire, and it's silly. Just knock it off. I mean, you're not helping these people by celebrating a mental illness."
Well, and that's exactly right. And when did it get to the point that it was okay for us to actually celebrate mental illness? Because that's what's happening. I mean, when did it become acceptable to take somebody who has a psychological condition, which has long been recognized as a psychological condition, and then extol the virtues of it as if they've done something right?
Well, when the mainstream media has become the propaganda arm for a party that wants to get votes off of pandering to these people, as you said, 0.3 of 1% of the entire American population has gender dysphoria. There's a lot of teenagers who fancy that they are, but that's a fad, right? That's like a bad haircut. But Bud Light, Bud Anheuser-Busch, what are you thinking? Do you have any idea who your audience is?
Yeah.
That you would go out on a limb and alienate the largest part of your beer drinking audience with this trans celebration?
I don't know if you saw it.
Have you talked about that?
Yeah, I'm about to jump right into it. As a matter of fact, that's the next article I've got.
Get after it.
Well, I was just telling you, I was going to ask you if you saw Kid Rock did a video of him taking a whole six pack of Bud Light out by the lake by his house and blasting it with an automatic weapon.
Yeah, I read about that. Yeah, he's quite a conservative in that regard. Me, Bud Light, I don't care. I don't care who buys it or drinks it. My brother and his wife drink it. It gives me a headache. I can't drink that particular brand. And, anyway, well, you get on it. Great show. Love you guys.
All right.
Have a good afternoon.
We'll see you, Sparky. Take care, man. All right, Boomer, that's perfect timing for a break. Let's do that right now. We'll come right back. He's right. I've got an article. It's right here in my hands. The one I chose is from Daily Wire. Yeah, we'll talk about that, plus all the other products that Dylan Mulvaney is now the spokesperson for. What the heck? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Hey, folks, I got to tell you, ZLA Solutions. So ZLA Solutions been with us for many moons now. ZLA Solutions does a lot of work helping businesses find solutions to things that they got to work on. Quality control, sorting and containment, logistics, warehousing, all that. But their bread and butter remains staffing. So, yeah, ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. If you're looking for a job, they got jobs posted right now on their website. Go check them out. They're all over North Alabama. But if you're also, by the way, an employer needing to find people, doesn't matter whether it's in onesies and twosies with special niche skills, or if you need an entire shift of folks, they can do the recruiting, the background checks, the drug testing. And I always say it, blue collar, white collar, no collar, it don't matter. So yeah, ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. I know these folks personally. I encourage you to check them out. They are having a banner year at putting people and jobs together, and they're good at it. ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. And tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. I would appreciate it. So I'm doing this piece right now. I call this Transamerica. Got a piece here for the Daily Wire. Headline reads, Suds, Skirts, and Sneakers. Here are the brands that have sponsored trans activist Dylan Mulvaney. Dylan Mulvaney is all the rage right now. Apparently, you can, and by the way, his behavior, if you watch him, is so over the top. I don't care if you like or dislike transgenderism. It doesn't matter. His behavior is a clown show. Just so, so beyond the pale. Giggling, skipping, running around, clapping his hands. By the way, girls don't act that way. No. Anyway, transgender activist social media star Dylan Mulvaney has garnered criticism for his several brand deals. I mean, all right, Dylan's making money, but it's what bothers me is the products are choosing to do this at their own peril. I mean, so first of all, Bud Light. Bud Light confirmed that it has a brand partnership with Mulvaney on Tuesday, claiming it's part of an effort to, quote, authentically connect with their customers. Authentically connect? Do you think the vast majority of dudes out there who drink Bud Light are going to be feeling good about you authentically connecting with Dylan Mulvaney and putting his face to celebrate his 365 days of girlhood, really, on the cans? But then on top of that, you got Ulta, which is, Ulta's a beauty brand company. Ulta, they've got him doing a podcast with a gender fluid hairdresser, and that didn't go well for him. And then they got Kate Spade. Kate Spade, that's a big name. Kate Spade posted a video last month featuring Mulvaney shopping for dresses and the perfect spring outfit at their store location in New York. And then you got on top of Bud Light and Kate Spade and all of them, you got Nike. Of course, Nike did the whole thing with, what's the dude's name who was the first one to kneel down, the quarterback? See, I can't remember his name. Kyle Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kaepernick. He's got Nike now. But, of course, he's modeling leggings and sports bras. A dude. Anyway, that's where we are right now. That's what's happening. That's what's ridiculous. That's what's also incensing some people. It's something. If I got a call on the line, I got about 2 minutes here, so I'll take it real quick. Jeff from Indiana. Jeff, what you doing, Matty?
Hey, Phil, I'm enjoying my time off. That's what I'm doing.
Still off. All right, good.
Oh, yeah, off till Monday, man. I've got it made now.
Well, what's on your mind?
I just like to, give my sympathy to the people whoever has any Budweiser stock right now because I feel your loss. I would also like to take this opportunity to say, if you want to hire me as your CEO, I'm available. I will do it for the same money that Hunter Biden did for the energy company. I have just as much experience, if not more, in the beer operations than he does of energy. And I'll take that same salary. So,
yeah. I'll tell you what, let's get a bidding war going. I'll do it for half the Hunter Biden salary. What do you think of that?
I'll underbid you, man. I'll do it for a quarter.
Here, hold my beer and watch this.
Exactly. Yeah. I can't imagine too many transvestites saying, or transsexuals sitting there saying, hold my beer, watch me do this.
Well,
I don't think they know who their audience is. All my friends right now who are pretty good heavy drinkers of Budweiser products, they're not going to tipping those up again for a while.
No, I think a lot of folks are saying that. Hey, Jeff, my music's playing, brother. I got to go. You have your enjoy your days off. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon. Okay. All right. Here we are. Another break. That went fast. All right. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned, and we'll be right back. All you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama. And I'm talking about this show goes down south of Birmingham, way up north of Huntsville, from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. I'm in number two of the Triple Dipper. I don't think we're going to make three, but it's been a great show, though. I think I laughed more during that Boomer McQueen segment.
It was a good one.
I mean, that was like several days of laughter crammed into
just
one half hour period.
In.
Yeah, you guys are a hoot. Transamerica. I want to make sure I'm clear on something. All right, this is not an indictment of someone because they have gone down this road. It's an indictment of culture that's embracing it. This is an indictment of a cultural push right now to say that you're wrong if you don't condone. Let me make sure we're clear on something. It is possible to not condemn and also not condone. All right? There's that. And let's make sure that everybody understands that, first of all, there's going to be a religious or faith-based objection to transgenderism. There's going to be a biological, agnostic to faith maybe, but at least biological argument against it. There's going to be, for that matter, a socio-cultural opposition to it. And then there's going to be even a safety issue to it. I mean, the idea that we're going to say, you know, a three-year-old told me that they want to go ahead and have their genitals mutilated. And we thought, that would be a good idea. Or how about, I've got a 12-year-old. And she's just hitting puberty, and we're going to make sure that she can probably never have kids in case she changes her mind when she's over the age of majority. Keep in mind, none of these treatments can even happen without the adult saying so, because the laws of the land do not allow a child to make that level of medical decision-making. We're talking about laws in every state that prevent statutory rape. Why? Because the legal position is that a minor does not have quote-unquote capacity to consent to sex with an adult. But yet we're going to go ahead and say, the minor told me that they believe they are in the wrong body, and we have to believe them. Therefore, we as the adult will sign the waivers and pay the bills to have their bodies altered forever. If that's not just complete distortion of reality, I don't know what is. I mean, that's Alice in Wonderland crap. That's seriously, and in fact, I don't even want to, Boomer, I was about to say jackassery, but don't play the sound effect. Don't play it, because that almost makes light of it. This is serious business. If you're having that water cooler conversation, then point out the fact that nowhere in the law are children allowed to make the decisions that the transgender movement wants to believe that they can make. Nowhere. It's biological, it is faith-based, it is reality, it is psychological, And oh, by the way, it's just sociocultural and it's safety. All of those things wrap up into arguments as to why this is a really, really bad idea. Colorado right now, story that came out just yesterday. Colorado, the Free Beacon, reports that Colorado is poised now to become a haven for youth gender reassignment surgeries. Really? Colorado wants to be known as a sanctuary for youth gender reassignment surgeries? Surgeries, not even hormone treatments, freaking surgeries. Colorado House of Representatives on Saturday, led by Democrats, passed Senate Bill 188, which would require the state's courts and medical licensing boards to protect doctors who dispense hormones and perform sex changes on teens from states that restrict those surgeries, as well as those who provide abortions. They also, by the way, passed two other bills that would expand abortion access. Colorado, man. You're getting out there, aren't you? Just going to go ahead and let's do it all while we got the moment. I mean, let's kill the babies before they're born and let's mutilate them once they're born. How about it? Good Lord. The prophets of Baal have nothing on this. This is a government-sponsored sacrifice of children. Oh. Okay, anyway. ACLU, by the way, decided to sue the state of Indiana because just the opposite, the state of Indiana just banned what they like to call gender-affirming care. By the way, you're not affirming anything. You're affirming dysphoria. You're not affirming. If you want to affirm a child, affirm who they are, not who you want them to be. Affirm that child as being the best version of themselves that was ever born into this world. Don't affirm, well, you know, I've always wanted a girl. Don't you like playing with dolls, little boy? No, that's not affirming. That's disaffirming. The American Civil Liberties Union, according to local news channel WTHR out of Indianapolis, has now sued the state of Indiana over a bill that was just signed that bans gender-affirming care for minors. Governor Eric Holcomb signed the bill on Wednesday. Permanent gender-changing surgeries with lifelong impacts and medically prescribed preparation for such a transition should occur as an adult, not as a minor, said the governor. I agree. By the way, our governor agrees too, Governor Kay Ivey. I will tell you that I'll call out things I don't like when she does them, but I'll call out things I do like when she does them. And she signed a bill last year passed by the legislature that, number one, bans non-biological entry into the other biological sex's sports. So you cannot be born a dude and you're 6'2" and you weigh 198 pounds and then go compete in girls' basketball. Can't do it. You can't have legs that are 8 inches longer than the average girl and run the hurdles in the girls' track meet. And oh, by the way, you shouldn't be what I just watched a video of again a moment ago, right before I came back on the air, of the dude fighting as a woman in mixed martial arts who fractured the skull of her opponent. Of his opponent, I should say. And it shouldn't be allowed to happen, man. This is wrong. Someone's going to die. Someone is literally going to die. And then people are going to go, oh, maybe we shouldn't have allowed that. You think? I hope the people who run that MMA match, I hope they get their pants suit off. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey, CNN reported last 2 years ago, 2021. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey, a Republican, signed a bill into law requiring all Alabama athletes in K-12 public school to compete in sports based on the gender they were assigned at birth, joining a growing trend among Republican-controlled legislatures across the country. The bill states that no K-12 public school is allowed to participate in, sponsor, or provide coaching staff for interscholastic athletic events at which athletes are allowed to participate in competition against athletes who are of a different biological gender. I'm sorry. The fact that we have to have that legislation still boggles my mind. How did we get here? I'm proud that we have it in Alabama though, but you might want to know this. Another one of those mind boggling things is when states decide to pit themselves against other states for acting under their own state constitution to enact state laws. What'd you just say to me, Phil? So, okay, let me draw you a diagram. So here's the thing. The story I've got right here came off Fox News dated yesterday. The state of California is joining in on a lawsuit against the state of West Virginia. Why? Because the state of West Virginia has a law that bans boys from participating in girls' sports. You can't be a dude competing against chicks. You just can't. And West Virginia, guess what? Under the 10th Amendment, they have a sovereign right to pass laws that are the law of their land at that point. And California doesn't like that. California's Democratic Attorney General Rob Bonta led an amicus brief in the case of BPJ versus West Virginia State Board of Education, calling the West Virginia law an absurd legislative effort targeting transgender school children. Targeting. Now we're targeting. We said you have to compete in the, I mean, if you want to claim you're a girl, but you're really a biological dude, just go do the best you can in boys' sports, you know? Or for that matter, realize you might have made a life choice and you got to live with it. You don't get to just, by the way, I just want to go ahead and say, I think my truck identifies as a Prius, therefore I should be allowed to park in the economy parking. Yeah. Yeah, there's that. I think I identify as a millionaire, therefore I want expanded credit on my credit card. Yeah. Yeah, I do. You don't get to make crap up. On Tuesday, California's Democrat Attorney General led that amicus brief, and he said this: preventing transgender elementary kids from living regular lives, it's not a regular life, by the way, through legislative action is absurd and dangerous. No child should be denied the opportunity to have a normal childhood or play school sports because of their gender. Yes, actually, they should. So me being the father of a daughter who's now full grown, but she used to play little girl soccer, I would not have wanted to have her growing up and going into high school playing girls' sports and boys were beating up on her. Just not going to happen. So, yeah, there's all that. I tell you what, if we got a caller coming, man, I'm up against a break, so I will take it real quickly if it's possible. As Boomer sneezes into the phone. Bless you. I'll take that real quick. Is that Mark from Madison? Hey, Mark, how you doing?
I'm hoping I don't catch COVID from Boomer. You know, I'm a government contractor, and I'm just wondering if I were to go in and identify as a Native American transgender male, would I get to get that? And you know, and also from the military, would I get the veteran owned female minority ability with a small business?
And while you're at it, go ahead and identify as a Alaskan Native American. Then you got it made in the contracting world, don't you?
It's unreal. And I don't understand. You know, I was looking up something. I was talking with one of my friends the other day, and they were saying, you know, well, you know, Madonna's going to do this show in Nashville, and it's going to be for transgender because they're, you know, there's homicide and everybody's attacking the transgender. So I just like, you know, I'll Google it. I looked up. There were 32 transgenders that were murdered in 2022, according to the statistics. 80% of those were basically domestic violence. So it was their partner.
Oh, wow.
That had done that. So it's not this mass genocide of these people. And you look at it, at what point, all I've seen is like, you know, transgenders that have turned on their own or this Christian deal. It's like, when does the common person, the Christian, get to claim, hey, there's hate crimes against me?
Yeah. It's a great question. I mean, Mark, it's a perfect question, because right now what really happened, and we haven't seen the manifesto yet from the shooter in Nashville, but the reality is, the real belief is that shooter targeted the school because it was a Christian school and did not agree with her beliefs. More to come.
Unreal. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I'm hoping and praying that there's a change. You know, the Trump the other night. I'm not necessarily a big Trump fan, but I thought what he talked about the other night, that was good. And, you know, one thing he talked about in there was just that, you know, he's been attacked because he's a white guy, the reverse racism. I'm like, there should be these situations where, you know, just common sense can stand up and say, you know what you're doing, it has nothing about me being black or white or transgender or whatever. You're just, it's not right. Like you said, the Right Side Radio, it's just not right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I totally agree. Mark, great call, man. We got to run to a break, but thank you so much. And call in next time and Boomer won't sneeze in the mic on you. That's that. Take it to a break, brother. Get you a Kleenex. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll come back and put a cap on this one. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, let me tell you real quick, one of our newest sponsors, Elm Foundation, that's E-L-M, Elm Foundation. It stands for Expect Little Miracles. I encourage you to check them out because they are doing some way cool stuff, helping people get back off the streets onto a productive track in life. And this is not just one of those like government programs where you throw money at it and hope it sticks. This is an actual, we will walk through this with you type program. They're looking at helping people to get job certifications and skills training, helping to build their resume, find a way to plug back in and find some of their worth in the ability to be productive. And they also provide accountability. They'll walk through it. They'll challenge you to stay in tune, to get the support you need. But oh, by the way, they will also say, why did you do and not do that? That's a great program. The Elm Foundation, they're based out of Huntsville. Their website is ELMHSV, as in Elm Huntsville, ELMHSV.org. That's Elm Huntsville, ELMHSV.org. Check them out and tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio if you get a chance to talk to them. All right, I am going to go back to this. If I got a call, I do. Is that Allie? Allie from Athens is on the phone. Hey, Allie, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, Colonel, Senator, and Counselor. And I'm out about... I'm out and about delivering Athens now, and I wrote a piece about Private First Class Manning, who was born Bradley and became Chelsea, and did a pretty good job into all the things. And here's what is so wild to me. I mean, I'm sorry for whatever set the dude up to make the kinds of choices that he felt like he had to make. But the fact of the matter is, by his own admission, when he was first in basic training, still as Bradley, he declared himself to be unfit psychologically and physically for military service. Wow. But what ended up happening? Because they were short on intel analysts, he got sent to Baghdad after you and I got home. And one of the first things that he did was he took a picture of the inside of a secure compartmentalized intel facility,
right,
and put it on Facebook.
Yeah.
Now, when I was on Mod Menea, we couldn't even take pictures of the palace because of these skinny little antennas that were up at the top because it could indicate comms capabilities. So the guy went from that to all the rest of it, all the drama, all the treason, all of the documents out there. But what happened to him? Well, got to be turned into a girl kinda at the taxpayer's expense. Got to be a fellow at Harvard because they apparently needed somebody who could do LGBTQ stuff. Got to run for senator in Maryland and pull down 6% of the vote.
Yeah, it boggles the mind, doesn't it? I mean,
as
part of my, you know, long kind of eclectic resume, I actually used to work in a rehab center for several years, with adolescents, and I'll never forget sitting in a meeting. We were trying to talk through something that one of the kids had petitioned the right to do something, and somebody made the point in the meeting. They said, "Unhealthy people do not make healthy decisions," and I thought, "Wow, that summed it up pretty well." But that's what you just described. You had a guy who knew he was in a bad place when he was in basic training, and they let him go forward anyway, and then they affirmed, quote unquote, his lifestyle along the way. And basically he's a living epitome of unhealthy people do not make healthy decisions.
Exactly. And so now, because his Article 32 still has a particular segment that needs to be decided, he's been reassigned, whatever you want to say, has been reassigned to active duty in an undisclosed location due to security and privacy concerns.
I guarantee you he's somewhere drinking coffee and surfing TikTok and probably not doing a thing productive for the military and sucking down the taxpayer dime.
Maybe he works at MWR. You know?
No, that's only for honorable people like you. Allie, I'm out of time, my friend. I got to have to head. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Okay.
All right, take care. That was Allie from Athens, by the way, who publishes Athens Now. And you can find those copies all over the area. Boomer, I had like tons of text messages we didn't even get to.
Oh, there were a lot.
Yeah, there were a lot. Hey, I'll wrap this up as I know the music's about to start playing. Not only are we a state that banned transgender sports, your senator, Tommy Tuberville, is in D.C. right now. Story came out just in the last 30 days, has dropped a bill hoping to say at the national level that biological males shall not be able to participate in women's sports. Yeah, you know, we'll see where it goes. But I'm just glad we got some leadership in Alabama. All right, folks, what an amazing day. You guys have a great night. Boomer and I back here tomorrow at 2. We will see you then.